100 years ago today, the Government of Ireland Act was passed by the British Parliament, also known as the Fourth Home Rule Bill. The Act was the first step towards partition and the ultimate exclusion of the six counties in the north from an independent Irish state. We're going to hear now some detail on the early history of the Northern Ireland border. This report from Mark McMenamin outlines how this act ultimately culminated in the largest military engagement between the IRA and British forces in Ireland since 1916, a confrontation known as the Battle of Pettigo and Bileak.
From 1912 onwards, it became clear by many politicians and observers that something had to be done about Ulster.
That's historian Cormac Moore, author of the book Birth of the Border, The Impact of Partition in Ireland.
A number of schemes were suggested, such as allowing certain counties or all of Ulster remaining within Westminster. Some were looking for temporary exclusion of some Ulster counties, some were looking for permanent exclusion. But it was the Government of Ireland Act of 1920 which led to the partition of Ireland.
While initially suggesting a nine-county state, Northern Ireland eventually came into being later that year as a six-county state.
In the summer of 1921, before a truce was signed with Sinn Féin. And although it came into being, the structures of Northern Ireland were uncertain. And even as an entity, it probably would have survived anyway, but it may not have survived in the form it did. Lloyd George, a very slippery character, was open to different solutions as long as he got a deal with Sinn Féin.
When the border was eventually decided, it left many territories in either state that straddled the border undecided.
So Lloyd George decided to offer a boundary commission to Sinn Féin, and this became Article 12.
Article 12 of the 1921 Anglo-Irish Treaty stated that Northern Ireland could opt out of the Irish Free State and provided for a commission to establish a permanent frontier.
Now, what the Boundary Commission stated was that the border of Ireland would be decided at a future date in line with inhabitants' wishes and also dependent on geographic and economic needs. It was very vague. It was not determined when exactly the Boundary Commission would meet. No plebiscite was asked for, or no plebiscite was given. So it really was a very poor move by Sinn Féin.
I travelled to Pettigo in County Donegal, a town which itself is bisected by the Irish border, to meet local historian Brian Drummond.
We're in Pettigo, we're on the bridge, and you're in Northern Ireland, and I'm in the Republic of Ireland. And I suppose we're talking about Pettigo and, I suppose, the Battle of Bileak.
In 1922, a battle broke out between the IRA and the B-Specials and British reinforcements over the disputed territories on the Donegal-Fermanagh border.
In May, going into June, there's a battle. And it's the first time since 1916, if you consider that the campaign for Irish independence was very much a guerrilla campaign, this is now soldiers on the ground, so to speak. And you've got the first time since 1916 where the IRA are actually out in the open and they're fighting a force. And in this area, running from kind of Ballyshannon, Bundoran, up to Bileak, up to Pettigo, you've got the Irish National Army, you've got the IRA, you've got pro-treaty and anti-treaty, but that's not really even settled down yet. And they've got a force of about 100 men or thereabouts armed up, small arms and all the rest of it. But they occupy Bileak and they occupy Pettigo, which is essentially going to be part of Northern Ireland and eventually does end up as part of Northern Ireland.
The incident became a cause célèbre in London newspapers.
It starts getting reported back into newspapers in London. And where Lloyd George wants to kind of ignore it as being sort of, this is just like a little border thing and whatever, and it will go away. And it did actually go away. A guy called Winston Churchill takes a different view.
Eventually, Winston Churchill committed a group of British Army personnel to quell the battle, effectively imposing British rule on the contested areas.
And he, in the latter stages of the conflict, commits a substantial force of British troops to go and take the area, so to speak. There's 1,500 regulars involved. There's artillery, there's armoured cars, and eventually even there's fighter aircraft who are flying over the area to ensure that they are holding ground, so to speak.
The IRA had lost the Irish territory it had been protecting.
They lost the ground, they lost Bileak, they lost Pettigo. And it's also interesting because it's in current terms, it's also fake news. this is not really a battle. This is more kind of a shooting match across the border, what's going to become the border in later stages.
In many ways, the Battle of Pedigo set the tone for future years in relation to contested border areas.
And you have these reports in the London Times and other papers about this huge conflict and huge casualty, whatever, but it isn't. But it becomes a political cause celebre, and Churchill makes great play on it. And again, if you go online and the Pathé News website, I think on YouTube, you will find the British restaged the battle for cameras. And you can also get photographs online where, you know, guys standing across the wall fighting the rebels, all this sort of stuff, whatever. But what happened in the political sense was very significant, but it was based on a myth. A myth, and it's like many things in Irish history, like, you know, how great was the Battle of Billy?
Mark McMenamin was reporting there on the Battle of Pettigo and Billike in 1922 and the events leading up to that battle. And Mark McMenamin, who's a Donegal native, joins me now. Mark, first of all, tell us more about the towns themselves, about Billike and Pettigo. Where exactly are they?
Well, Billike and Pettigo are two quite unusual places, especially to anybody that hasn't been there themselves. Now, I'm from Ballyshannon originally, so they're very close to me in South Donegal. They run along the Donegal Fermanagh border, but they're peculiar in that the border comes straight into these towns. In the case of Pedigo, it bisects the town itself using the Termon River as the marking point. So essentially you have a situation where the two streets in the town, the main street is in Donegal, and the High Street, as they call it, is in County Fermanagh. So it literally bisects the border. In terms of Billike, a very strange situation where it kind of straddles along the River Erne, and you have a high point in the town called the Battery or Billike Fort, which is in the south, and then the main street of the town runs up in the north. And I suppose these two places are kind of indicative of the Battle of Billike and the Battle of Pedigo as they come to be known, because you have to imagine that in this time, coming up after the Government of Ireland Act, this is disputed territory. Nobody really knows, you know, there's a nationalist perception, a Sinn Féin perception, that this is southern land and then northern land on the unionist side, and both sides are willing to reinforce that assumption through force of arms if necessary.
And were people actually killed in the Battle of Pettigo and Billike?
Well, the Battle of Pettigo and Billike itself is kind of an unusual kind of a thing. First and foremost, it's the first time since 1916 that there are IRA men out actually fighting a war. There's no guerrilla warfare here. It's out in the open, same as 1916. It's also the first time that the British use artillery against Irish men since 1916 as well. And there's roughly a force of 100 IRA men. And initially, there's a group of Ulster Special Constabulary men, and what we've gone then to be B Specials and C Specials, which are led by Lord Brookborough. And there's fighting to and fro. And ultimately, there's four IRA men killed. Two of them from Tyrone and two of them from elsewhere. Now, there's no real indication of the British casualties because the whole thing becomes a cause celebre in London, particularly in the London newspapers, where they make the whole thing out to be this incredible battle, when in reality, it really wasn't as severe. But what you do have is 100 or so IRA men, mostly from counties Tyrone. A lot of them weren't even local. Some of them actually were from Cork and Kerry that had retreated from the Northern campaign. And they're holding off a substantial force of B Specials and reserves. Ultimately, Churchill sends in a much larger force of the British Army to really hammer home British rule in this area. Artillery, they send in more infantry men, and they even send in air support, you know, to make sure that they're taking these areas. Churchill makes great play on it. It's amped up big time in the British newspapers, but ultimately, four deaths on the Republican side.
Now, tell us a bit more about the news footage. You mentioned news footage in the report. Tell us a little bit more about that news footage, if you would.
There's some fantastic film footage of this, and you can check that out on the Irish Film Archive. So the Irish Film Institute have the Irish Independence Film Collection, which is available online. And you can actually watch some footage of the Battle of Pedigo and the Battle of Billike. The thing is, though, it's not actually footage of the Battle of Billike. It's restaged. So the British have actually restaged the battle for the cameras. So it's an early example of fake news. They've restaged it for propaganda purposes. And the Fleet Street newspapers make great play on this. And, you know, in these old silent films, there are title cards, which, you know, they preempt the action in each scene. Some of them are like, you know, the troops have the Sinn Féiners on the run, you know, and we're ridding the town of the rebels and all that. But there's no rebels in sight. It's just the British kind of firing artillery into a already deserted town. But it goes on to be shown all across the empire, and it's part of, I suppose, Churchill's role as the secretary for the colonies to hammer home this sort of propaganda that they're administering British rule in Ireland, and these contested areas will no longer be contested, so to speak.
Now, we heard also in the report about an initial idea of a 9-county northern state. Why was that considered, and was the idea ever really a runner?
Well, the initial idea, Lloyd George was determined to try and solve this issue, to solve the Ulster question, and he wanted to be the man that was going to solve it. Initially, what the Government of Ireland is it's an early attempt at federalism, you know, to bring the federalist model to Ireland and to give autonomy to Ulster. So initially, you know, the Ulster Unionists, they just wanted to be directly ruled by Westminster, but then they gradually saw it to be more advantageous to have their own devolved government because they could do what they wanted. And essentially, that's what they did in later years. Initially, they thought of a 9-county state and just to have one parliament in Dublin that would look after Munster, Connacht and Leinster. And then to have a 9-county parliament in Stormont looking after Ulster. But obviously, that wasn't going to work with the demographics. And I come from Donegal, and you know, there's a substantial Protestant community in Donegal. Even to this day, we have the only Orange Parade in the Republic of Ireland, is not too far where I'm from, in Rosnaula, every year. So there is that element there. But it wasn't going to work because of the demographics. Counties like Donegal, Cavan, Monaghan would have ensured that there was would have been essentially a slim Catholic majority. So it was never going to work. So an artificial majority for unionists had to be created. And thus the 6-county state became what it was and is there still to this day.
Now, of course, there was some doubt about what exactly the 6 counties was going to be. So talk to us a bit more about the Boundary Commission and how did the Irish government fare in their negotiations when it came to the drawing up of a border, a new border?
Well, the initial, I suppose, perception of the Irish government was that the border is there with the Government of Ireland Act in 1920. There's going to be a boundary commission, and they had hoped that they were going to get huge swathes of land. You know, that they were hoping to get Derry City, for example, huge parts of Armagh, Fermanagh, Tyrone. And it was quite a kind of a boozy assumption that they were going to, you know, get all these areas. And that's not the case. Obviously, then the Civil War happens down here, and it's a huge drawback in terms of this. Eventually, when there's a report published, then the first report is kind of leaked, you know, of what the Boundary Commission is going to determine. It's a lot less than they had ambitions for, the Irish government had. And you're looking at kind of actually situations where the Irish Free State is going to cede land to the Northern Ireland state. They look for that to be scrapped and to revert back to the Government of Ireland Act with the 6-county state and to maintain that status quo, which remains to this day.
Mark McMenamin, many thanks for joining us this evening to talk about the Battle of Baileak and Pettigo and the early history of the Northern Ireland border.